Next concert, the future in classical music.
We're talking with Daniel Rowland, important and fantastic violin player, been all over the world and setting out an anchor in Stift Festival in Holland.
Yeah.
Why do you see a future at all or a perspective in classic music?
Oui, this is a big question. Well, I have a t-shirt I wear quite a lot. It was our festival t-shirt from my Stift Festival from a couple of years ago. A quote by George Crumb, which is, "I'm optimistic about the future of music." And I think, I mean, what would kill music is if we do not constantly have new music created for us, if we do not constantly stay open-minded for interesting and surprising collaborations with other art forms, and if we do not create a situation where the concert hall is very accessible for people of all ages and all levels of experience with classical music. That will be killing if it is seen as something which is a bit elitist and maybe not for me, maybe for someone else, but not for me. And of course, then you're going to have a kind of decline. So, but I would say that festivals like the one we are now and Zult and so many others that I have the joy to go to, and maybe also my own, we try to create colorful, exciting programs full of contrasts, combining Schubert and Beethoven and Ravel and Shostakovich, combining that with brand new pieces which people were here for the first time, so they have no idea what they're going to hear. It's really exciting. And people come for the Schubert, and then what they remember of that concert quite possibly is a new piece by Olli Mussonen or Osvaldo Golichov or Peter Svasks or whoever. You know, people are creating music right now. And then to create an environment where let's put it like this, I think it's to think that the music alone is enough is a little bit too pure an attitude. I mean, it's also, in my experience, it's very important. Audience also comes to a lovely atmosphere, to a beautiful venue, for a kind of a coziness and a certain kind of vibe. And why not? If we can combine those things, the vibe, the beauty, the kind of feeling of having a nice outing, plus, by the way, presenting some really high level, fantastic music, then that's a good combination, I think.
Accessibility is a tricky thing, because some people confuse it with making things easier and broadening and limit everything. But the contrary is important, I think.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, I've never been particularly interested in concerts or creating concerts where it is everything super easy. Of course, if you only play Vivaldi Four Seasons or Mozart Eine kleine Nachtmusik, of course some people will come to that and they will maybe have a glass of champagne and they will think about their next business deal or, you know, whatever they're going to do on holiday. But probably the people who come only to that are not coming for the music. They're coming for more kind of social reasons. So yeah, I think the job for us festival creators or music managers or creators is to have an atmosphere which is accessible. Maybe the venue is beautiful, maybe the lighting is atmospheric, and the explanations we give are lighthearted and informative, and not stuffy and not academic. In the publicity, it's not scary. It's open-hearted and welcoming. But once people are there, in my experience, most people, maybe not everyone, but a big majority, loves also to be surprised and loves to be challenged and loves a bit of adventure in a concert. And of course, I'm not talking about something else I've done quite a lot in the past, is taking part in pure avant-gardistic new music festivals. That's something else. If you do that, you have to announce it. You know, if you're with London Sinfonietta or, you know, Ensemble Moderne or something like that, there is also an audience for that. But that's something else, you know. Only premieres, only hardcore new music. I think it's fantastic. And my father was a very avant-gardistic composer all his life. So I love that. But that will always be some kind of audience. You can't expect the general audience to come to a program of only of Boulez. So maybe they will do it very occasionally. But what we can expect, I think, is to put in an interesting, exciting thematic program connecting something by Schubert with an incredible new piece and explaining to the audience why this is connected, maybe through a mood or theme. For example, this festival here, the theme is childhood, memories of childhood and innocence and the joy of beginning of life. There's so much music one can connect with that. That applies to almost any theme so many themes one can choose that give you a huge, colorful scope of contrasting styles and periods that one can put together. And like that, make going to a concert something a really festive and adventurous experience for the audience. And also, I think we don't have to appeal to everyone. If someone says, well, this is what Daniel Roland does, I go to hear Schubert and then I also get some new piece, that's not for me, okay, then they don't have to come. They can also go to another festival where they hear only Schubert, that's also fine. But in my experience, many people love it and especially love the surprise and the new element. And also, I hear they love it. Of course, I like to talk about the music in a, you know, I hope in an engaging kind of way. They love that. And they love, if the musicians play with the real Spielfreude, with the real sense of music making in the moment, if they feel it's happening right now, it's not being kind of pre-cooked and we play it again tomorrow and we did it already yesterday. Maybe we did, but the feeling has to be like it's happening right now. I think then you can also challenge people with some quite adventurous music choices.
I think that's the secret in chamber music festivals, that people usually have met somewhere in the world or maybe have not met, but they make music on the spot. You could easily travel around and play kleine Nachtmusik all your life, and that would fill your pockets, but it wouldn't fill your heart and maybe not your brains. So what's the exciting part in being a festival programmer or a festival director? Because that is a stressful work, and it's a lot of panicking. It's grabbing for money, so all the unpleasant parts of life, but in the end it's so worthwhile.
Yeah, of course we're fighting like crazy to get the money, and my festival in Holland now is going into 22nd year, so in the one hand that's of course fantastic, on the other hand there are also always new initiatives appearing, so you have to constantly prove to the government and to the subsidy givers why you are unmissable and valuable and why you need the money. Okay, that's of course always some kind of fights, but as you say, the uniqueness of the Czech music festival is that it's not one string quartet who is touring, but it's people sometimes they will have met before in other festivals, but like our mentor Vladimir Mendelssohn used to say, that come to this concert because it's only performed once like this, only just under these stars. So that I think that's the feeling that you have to give in the festivals, that it is unique. You have to be there. Come to this little medieval church or to this castle or concert hall or outside under the stars or whatever it may be. You have to be there. And then something will happen. And we cannot guarantee that every time it will be magic, but we try to live dangerously. In fact, the festival T-shirt at my festival this year is a quote by Harnoncourt, Nicolas Harnoncourt, who is also one of my heroes. Of course, he said, true art is created on the edge of the catastrophe or on the edge of the cliff, like on a tipping point. You take a risk, you try something, you go, and occasionally you fall over the edge of the cliff, and then it's a little mini catastrophe, but still very exciting, but you have to live dangerously. And if you can dare to do that, and also thinking now of Peter Zwasks, who is here with us now, he is a man who... Music is all about the struggle between darkness and light, and also deeply spiritual in his case. And he's always looking for a combination of purity and kind of honesty in the music and love, but coupled with power and strength. So there are all kind of like paradoxes like that, which are really exciting. But let's say the Harnoncourt quote, living under the volcano, on the edge of the cliff, and daring to create something really potentially magical, and in any case, exciting, is probably very important.
No volcanoes and no cliffs really in Holland. So give me a little bit of the surroundings as a newcomer to the Stiff Festival.
Yeah.
What is the importance of the beauty of this?
Well, I would. It's maybe not completely dissimilar to Schleswig-Holstein kind of festival. Of course, it's not that enormous. The festival hub is the Stiftskerk, which is a 15th century little church which can fit 125 people. Then it's completely full. And I grew up opposite that church with my English composing father and my mom, who's from that area in Holland. That's the hub of the festival. That's where it started 22 years ago. But by now, we use a dozen or more venues all over the countryside, some very beautiful castles, a cathedral, a church, also the big concert hall in Enschede, which is an excellent space which can house even up to over 1,000 people if you want to do something bigger. But yeah, the feeling of Schleswig-Holstein, kind of the various beautiful locations in the nature. And then what I love to do there is this juxtaposition of the idyllic nature, the coziness, the gezelligheid, we say in Holland. It's like gemütlichkeit, coziness. It's very welcoming atmosphere, very beautiful countryside. Of course, we don't have, like you said, volcanoes and cliffs and mountains, but it is it's nevertheless bucolic and green and beautiful. But to juxtapose that with a kind of cutting-edge festival full of programmatic adventures and experiments, and that the kind of juxtaposition of that in this lovely kind of old-fashioned, beautiful, bucolic area is nice, I think. And people love it. I think people realize they're coming to a little to a castle or a church, or in the case of Petrus Vask's big concert, like the beautiful spiritual kind of cathedral. And then they're also ready to, okay, beautiful place, magical atmosphere. Now, ready to engage in some adventure, musical adventure. Whereas if you put them in like a more sterile concert hall with the same program, they probably wouldn't even come. And I realized that in my programming. If I try to do something in that concert hall in Enschede, it's a hall that I love. It's very good. Sounds good. Good sight lines. You can do many things there. But the audience, less people buy tickets for that because they find it, it's just like a normal concert hall. The whole point of the festival is also for them unusual locations, you know, connection with nature. But it doesn't have to be nature. It could also be like a disused factory or a cave, or so, but something out of the ordinary. And to come back to your first question, probably daring to combine serious, uncompromising music making somehow with that feeling of offering the audience an experience but out of the ordinary is one way forward.
Experiencing artists you've never met is something fantastic.
Yeah.
It's not also to play with them, but also to listen to them, to be one of the first detectors of a new baritone of a new violin. And you can be there and say, this is my person, this is my connection.
Yeah, yeah.
And that works so well when you're close to it.
Yeah, yeah. You mean you're speaking from your own experience as an audience member?
As an audience member, as a, I don't know, whatever detailed or experienced concert goer I am, but also on the stage, meeting new colleagues and under the roof of a festival. It's so immortal.
Of course, yeah, exactly. And that's so true. And of course, my job and the job of Claude here and all of us who create festivals, bigger or smaller, is to, one thing is the program, but another thing is to invite, be it 20, 30 or 100 musicians of whom you think that this magic can happen, that they dare to live close to the edge of the cliff, let's say, and that they have, of course, we're looking for people who are wonderful musicians, of course, who can play their instrument fantastically, but also who have a kind of a generous, warm-hearted attitude. And in a festival like this, everyone has that. And that's also because as festival director, of course, sometimes I feel sad for musicians who are maybe wonderful players, but something in their character means that they're maybe seen as not so nice to play with, because maybe there's something a bit egoistic in the music making. Maybe they are unwilling or unable to be communicative in the chamber music making. And yeah, they will probably not come back to these kind of festivals. On the other hand, if they are sublime pianists or violinists, they can probably play their concertos in other places where this element is less disturbing. But in a chamber music festival, you want people who play wonderfully well. but at the same time have a modesty and just a human warmth. And anyone in a festival who like this who starts having some kind of attitude or talking about, you know, my agent this or that, and that ridiculous, completely not done, out of the question. So I guess you end up then with a certain type of player who couples wonderful musicianship and obviously technique and all of that, because otherwise you can't make music well, but also a generous sense of humor and warmth. And I think the word generosity of spirit is mega important in this context. Yeah.
And just being, again, from the participants or from the audience side, being witnessing this generosity,
yeah,
that it's, really carries on for a long time, even longer than if you just go to the hall, see the star, let your CD be signed, and then afterwards say, I put it in the shelf, but I can't put it in my heart.
That's so true, yeah, so true. And I think also in a festival like this one, and I try to do the same, it's an experience. I try to treat the whole festival bubble, which in my case is like 10 days, some festivals are longer or shorter. There's like 30, 35 concerts in 10 days. Someone who comes to all the concerts should feel they have some kind of journey. Someone else might come to 10 or 5 or 1 concert or none at all, indeed. But I think however you do, whether you just dip into it or you go to all of them, not many people go to all, but many people do come to, you know, 10 or 15 concerts, that should be, have an added value, like a kind of like a journey. So what I'm saying is you try to, we have, for example, a big festive, lighthearted opening concert. Then the symphonic concert is like where we will do like a premiere and more serious. Then in the cathedral in Oldenzaal this year, it will be Petrus Vasks homage. This will be really spiritual, really kind of time standing still, feeling maybe some magical contact with another dimension. At least that's what we go for. Then in a little church where the festival started, the Stiftskerk, that's where we can do the real, true, intimate chamber music, you know, through the ages. And people love that. They always say that that church is actually where they love to come most, because it feels like so pure and so real. And but then we also do, for example, concert on a big open air stage. This year it's with she's like a theatrical personage. She sings chansons and rock music, and she's theatrical. Why not? Also, I think it's great having Petrus Vasks and Ellen ten Damme. It's like a wildly theatrical pop, almost, kind of personage. And in between that, chamber music from Bach to Penderecki, to Jörg Wiedmann, to Schubert, to Schnittke, to Chopin. I mean, great. No, the music world is like it's a feast. It's a banquet of so much beauty, and to show all these contrasts. And I take it seriously. I try to show real clear thematic connections, but that's something else. It should be, for someone who understands these thematic connections, it should be fascinating to think, that's where, it's a chronological connection. It's something through time or space. Someone else who doesn't care about that, they just want to be, let's say, entertained or challenged or excited or whatever, or moved. For them, it should be equally gratifying, you know? So you try to appeal on various levels, I guess.
I heard a lot the word they, for them, and we. Now I want to hear the word I.
In what context?
In the context of what's in it for you, because you're organizing, you're directing, you're making sure but what comes back to your heart?
Well, I love this whole process of programming. Yeah, otherwise I wouldn't have survived 22 years doing it. I love that. And as the festival fortunately got bigger, possibilities get greater, you have more budget. And with budget, that's a very prosaic word, but with budget comes possibilities to program exciting things. So for me to think, who am I going to, in which composer in residence could I contact for the next year, for the year after, and which crazy, for example, a few years ago, what popped into my mind, I wanted to do something to show the climate destruction. So we did Mozart Requiem interspersed with Black Angels by George Crumb, like, you know, popping up and down between the two. Yeah, I don't think that's something that's done every day. And then I played in the Crumb, and I heard around me this choir singing the Requiem. And then I felt like, for instance, in a moment like that, or when I did my first Distant Light, Petrus Vasks concerto, with him there in the front row. There are so many, fortunately, many other examples that I feel every, as a programmer and also as a musician, then all these things come together. It's very inspiring. But I also don't have to play everything. Of course, I don't. I also love, if I can, like at the back, if I have 20 minutes in between or even 3 minutes, just peeking through the door from backstage, seeing a concert that's going on, if I see musicians are happy, audience is happy, then that's very, it's very gratifying. It's a lovely feeling. So, yeah, that I think that's what's in it for me as a programmer and as a host and as a musician. And I grew up in this area in Holland where everyone comes to. So somehow, because I lived in London many years and now I live in Amsterdam, but still, this is where my mother still lives and where I grew up. And to see people enjoying that part of the world is also nice. Yeah.
Coming back to the future and closing with the future,
yeah.
Is that kind of holding tight to one stable point in your life, is that important to be able to help creating the future?
One stable could be anything, you mean? Like, well, in my case now, the stable thing in my life is my wife and my young daughters, you know, who are also here now. That this is, yeah, I relatively late, I guess, to be a dad of such young daughters, but it's amazing. So yeah, for me, the stability now of properly living in Amsterdam, having made a very cozy home there, Maya, my wife, who's a fantastic cellist, and also besides that, amazing mama for the kids and these little girls. Yeah, having this now, this kind of home life and coupling that with all the musical adventures, I think that feels like a very healthy and somehow sustainable project for the future for me. So I think that gives me all the good energy that I need. And talking with Petrus, who says that in the end it's all about love, of course that's very true.
And that's something we'll all carry from this festival. Thank you very much,
Thank
Daniel
you.
Rowland.
Pleasure. Very nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Next concert, The Future in Classical Music.